Shukadeva Goswami said, Lord Krishna, who is himself powerful time, desired to destroy the false pride of Lord Indra. When Nanda and the other senior men of Vrindavan heard Sri Krishna's statement, they accepted his words as proper. The cowherd community then did all that Madhusudana had suggested. They arranged for the Brahmins to recite the auspicious Vedic mantras, and using the paraphernalia that had been intended for Indra's sacrifice, they presented offerings to Govardhan Hill and the Brahmins with reverential respect. They also gave grass to the cows. Then, placing the cows, bulls, and calves in front of them, they circumambulated Govardhan. As the beautifully ornamented cowherd ladies followed along, riding on wagons drawn by oxen, they sang the glories of Lord Krishna, and their songs mingled with the Brahmins' chanting of benedictions. Krishna then assumed an unprecedented huge form to instill faith in the cowherd men. Declaring, I am Govardhan Mountain, he ate the abundant offerings. Together with the people of Raja, the Lord bowed down to this form of Govardhan Hill, thus in effect offering obeisances to himself. Then he said, just see how this hill has appeared in person and bestowed mercy upon us. This Govardhan Hill, assuming any form he wishes, will kill any residents of the forest who neglect him. Therefore, let us pay our obeisances to him for the safety of ourselves and our cows. The members of the cowherd community, having thus been inspired by Lord Krishna to properly execute the sacrifice to Govardhan Hill, the cows, and the Brahmins, returned with him to their village of Braja. Chapter 25. Lord Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill. Shukadeva Goswami said, my dear King Parikshit, when Indra understood that his sacrifice had been put aside, he became furious with Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men who were accepting Krishna as their lord. Angry Indra sent forth the clouds of universal destruction, known as Samvartaka. Imagining himself the supreme controller, he spoke as follows. Just see how these cowherd men living in the forest have become so greatly intoxicated by their prosperity. They have surrendered to an ordinary human being, Krishna, and thus they have offended the gods. Their taking shelter of Krishna is just like the foolish attempt of men who abandon transcendental knowledge of the self and instead try to cross over the great ocean of material existence in the false boats of fruitive ritual sacrifices. These cowherd men have acted inimically toward me by taking shelter of this ordinary human being, Krishna, who thinks himself very wise, but who is simply a foolish, arrogant, over-talkative child. To the clouds of destruction, King Indra said, the prosperity of these people has made them mad with pride, and their arrogance is backed up by Krishna. Now go and remove their pride and bring their animals to destruction. I will follow you to Braja, riding on my elephant Airavata and taking with me the swift and powerful wind gods to decimate the coward village of Nanda Maharaj. Shukadeva Goswami said, on Indra's order, the clouds of universal destruction, released untimely from their bonds, went to the coward pastures of Nanda Maharaj. There they began to torment the inhabitants by powerfully pouring down torrents of rain upon them. Propelled by the fearsome wind gods, the clouds blazed with lightning bolts and roared with thunder as they hurled down hailstones. As the clouds released torrents of rain as thick as massive columns, the earth was submerged in the flood, and high ground could no longer be distinguished from low. The cows and other animals, shivering from the excessive rain and wind, and the cowherd men and ladies, pained by the cold, all approached Lord Govinda for shelter. Trembling from the distress brought about by the severe rainfall and trying to cover their heads and calves with their own bodies, the cows approached the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The cowherd men and women addressed the Lord, Krishna, Krishna, O most fortunate one, please deliver the cows from the wrath of Indra. O Lord, you are so affectionate to your devotees, please save us also. Seeing the inhabitants of his Gokula rendered practically unconscious by the onslaught of hail and blasting wind, the Supreme Lord Hari understood that this was the work of angry Indra. Sri Krishna thought, because we have stopped his sacrifice, Indra has caused this unusually fierce, unseasonal rain, together with terrible winds and hail. By my mystic power, I will completely counteract this disturbance caused by Indra. Demigods like Indra are proud of their opulence, and out of foolishness they falsely consider themselves the lord of the universe. I will now destroy such ignorance. Since the demigods are endowed with the mode of goodness, the false pride of considering oneself the lord should certainly not affect them. When I break the false prestige of those bereft of goodness, my purpose is to bring them relief. I must therefore protect the coward community by my transcendental potency, for I am their shelter, I am their master, and indeed they are my own family. After all, I have taken a vow to protect my devotees. Having said this, Lord Krishna, who is Vishnu himself, picked up Govardhan Hill with one hand and held it aloft just as easily as a child holds up a mushroom. The Lord then addressed the coward community. O mother, O father, O residents of Braja, if you wish, you may now come under this hill with your cows. You should have no fear that this mountain will fall from my hand, and don't be afraid of the wind and rain, for your deliverance from these afflictions has already been arranged. Their minds thus pacified by Lord Krishna, they all entered beneath the hill, where they found ample room for themselves and all their cows, wagons, servants, and priests, and for all other members of the community as well. Lord Krishna, forgetting hunger and thirst, and putting aside all considerations of personal pleasure, stood there holding up the hill for 7 days as the people of Braja gazed upon him. When Indra observed this exhibition of Lord Krishna's mystic power, he became most astonished. Pulled down from his platform of false pride and his intentions thwarted, he ordered his clouds to desist. Seeing that the fierce wind and rain had now ceased, the sky had become clear of rain clouds, and the sun had risen, Lord Krishna, the lifter of Govardhan Hill, spoke to the cowherd community as follows. My dear cowherd men, please go out with your wives, children, and possessions. Give up your fear. The wind and rain have stopped, and the river's high waters have subsided. After collecting their respective cows and loading their paraphernalia into their wagons, the cowherd men went out. The women, children, and elderly persons gradually followed them. While all living creatures looked on, the Supreme Personality of Godhead put down the hill in its original place, just as it had stood before. All the residents of Vrindavan were overwhelmed with ecstatic love, and they came forward and greeted Sri Krishna according to their individual relationships with him, some embracing him, others bowing down to him, and so forth. The cowherd women presented water mixed with yogurt and unbroken barley corns as a token of honor, and they showered auspicious benedictions upon him. Mother Yashoda, Mother Rohini, Nanda Maharaj, and Balaram, the greatest of the strong, all embraced Krishna. Overwhelmed with affection, they offered him their blessings. In the heavens, all the demigods, including the Siddhas, Sadhyas, Gandharvas, and Charanas, sang the praises of Lord Krishna and showered down flowers in great satisfaction. My dear King Parikshit, the demigods in heaven resoundingly play their conch shells and kettle drums, and the best of the Gandharvas, led by Tumuru, began to sing. Surrounded by his loving cowherd boyfriends and Lord Balaram, Krishna then went off to the place where he had been tending his cows. The cowherd girls returned to their homes, singing joyfully about the lifting of Govardhan Hill and other glorious activities of Lord Krishna, who had so deeply touched their hearts. Srila Rupa Goswami prays, With his dark bluish raised arm, Krishna held Govardhan Hill aloft. Being full of palm trees, kunati flowers, and various minerals, and having been washed by the great rains, the hill became yellow. It appeared very opulent, like a great golden umbrella furnished with a large sapphire handle, and it shone magnificently. Chapter 26, Wonderful Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami said, "The cowherd men were astonished when they saw Krishna's activities, such as lifting Govardhan Hill. Unable to understand his transcendental potency, they approached Nanda Maharaj and spoke as follows. Since this boy performs such extraordinary activities, how could he warrant a birth among worldly men like ourselves, a birth that for him would seem to be contemptible? How could this seven-year-old boy playfully hold up the great hill Govardhan with one hand, just as a mighty elephant holds up a lotus flower? As a mere infant who had hardly yet opened his eyes, he drank the breast milk of the powerful demoness Putana, and then sucked out her very life air as well, just as the force of time sucks out the youth of one's body. Once, when only 3 months old, little Krishna was crying and kicking up his feet as he lay beneath a huge cart. Then the cart fell and turned upside down simply because it was struck by the tip of his toe. At the age of one, while sitting peacefully, he was taken up into the sky by the demon Trinavarta. But baby Krishna grabbed the demon's neck, causing him great pain, and thus killed him. Once, his mother tied him with ropes to a mortar because she had caught him stealing butter. Then, crawling on his hands, he dragged the mortar between a pair of Arjun trees and pulled them down. Another time, when Krishna was tending the calves in the forest together with Balaram and the cowherd boys, the demon Bakasura came with the intention of killing Krishna. But Krishna seized this inimical demon by the mouth and tore him apart. Desiring to kill Krishna, the demon Vatsa disguised himself as a calf and entered among Krishna's calves. But Krishna killed the demon and, using his body, enjoyed the sport of knocking kapita fruits down from the trees. Together with Lord Balaram, Krishna killed the jackass demon and all his friends, thereby securing the safety of the Talaban forest, which abounded with fully ripened palm fruits. After arranging for the mighty Lord Balaram to kill the terrible demon Palumba, Krishna freed Braj's cowherd boys and their animals from a forest fire. Krishna chastised the most poisonous serpent, Kaliya, and after humbling him, he drove him forcibly from the lake of the Yamuna. In this way, the Lord made the water of that river free of the snake's powerful poison. Dear Nanda, how is it that we and all the other residents of Braja cannot give up our constant affection for your son? And how is it that he is so spontaneously attracted to us? On the one hand, this boy is only 7 years old, and on the other, we see that he has lifted the great hill Govardhan. Therefore, O King of Braja, a doubt about your son arises within us. Nanda Maharaj replied, O cowherd men, just hear my words and let all your doubts concerning my son be gone. Some time ago, Garga Muni spoke to me as follows about this boy. Your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past, he assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow. And now he has appeared in a blackish color. For many reasons, this beautiful son of yours sometimes appeared previously as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, those who are learned sometimes call this child Vasudeva. For this son of yours, there are many forms and names according to his transcendental qualities and activities. These are known to me, but people in general do not understand them. To increase the transcendental bliss of the cowherd men of Gokula, this child will always act auspiciously for you, and by his grace only, you will surpass all difficulties. O Nanda Maharaj, as recorded in history, when there was an irregular, incapable government, Indra having been dethroned, and when honest people were being harassed and disturbed by thieves, this child appeared in order to curb the rogues and to protect the people and enable them to flourish. Demons cannot harm the demigods who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to all auspicious Krishna cannot be defeated by enemies. Therefore, O Nanda, this child of yours is as good as Narayana. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayana. Thus, you should not be astonished by his activities. Nanda Maharaj continued, After Garga Rishi spoke these words to me and returned home, I began to consider that Krishna, who keeps us free from trouble, is actually an expansion of Lord Narayana. Shukadeva Goswami continued, Having heard Nanda Maharaj relate the statements of Garga Muni, the residents of Vrindavan became enlivened. Their perplexity was gone, and they worshipped Nanda and Lord Krishna with great respect. Devi Vashiti Yagna Viplavarusha Vajrashma Varshani Lai Sidat Pala Pashustri Atma Shadanam Vishvana Kamkyutsmayan Utpatyay Kakare Nishayla Mamaloli Lottilin Ramita Vindran Goshnam Apan Mahindra Malabitpi Anna Indro Gavan Indra became angry when his sacrifice was disrupted, and thus he caused rain and hail to fall on Gokula, accompanied by lightning and powerful winds, all of which brought great suffering to the cowherds, animals, and women there. When Lord Krishna, who is by nature always compassionate, saw the condition of those who had only him as their shelter, he smiled broadly and lifted Govardhan Hill with one hand, just as a small child picks up a mushroom to play with it. In this way he protected the cowherd community. May he, Govinda, the lord of the cows and the destroyer of Indra's false pride, be pleased with us. Chapter 27. Lord Indra and Mother Surabhi offer prayers. Shukadeva Goswami said, after Krishna had lifted Govardhan Hill and thus protected the inhabitants of Braja from the terrible rainfall, Surabhi, the mother of the cows, came from her planet to see Krishna. She was accompanied by Indra. Indra was very ashamed of having offended the Lord. Approaching him in a solitary place, Indra fell down and lay his helmet, whose effulgence was as brilliant as the sun, upon the Lord's lotus feet. Indra had now heard of and seen the transcendental power of omnipotent Krishna, and his false pride at being the Lord of the three worlds was thus defeated. Holding his hands together in supplication, he addressed the Lord as follows.
Indra uvacha vishundra satvam dhavadhama shantam tapomayam vasta rajasta maskam mahamayoyam gunasandra vaho navinjate de grahanam bandha Ye man hada gya jagadish maninas vam vikshakale bhayamashutam madam hit vayamagam babajancha pasmaya iha kalanam apitinu shasanam.
King Indra said, your transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change, shining with knowledge, and devoid of passion and ignorance. In you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance. How then could there exist in you the symptoms of an ignorant person, such as greed, lust, anger, and envy, which are produced by one's previous involvement in material existence, and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence? And yet, as the Supreme Lord, you impose punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. You are the Father and spiritual master of this entire universe, and also its supreme controller. You are insurmountable time, imposing punishment upon the sinful for their own benefit. Indeed, in your various incarnations, selected by your own free will, you act decisively to remove the false pride of those who presume themselves masters of this world. Even fools like me, who proudly think themselves universal lords, quickly give up their conceit and directly take to the path of the spiritually progressive when they see you are fearless even in the face of time. Thus you punish the mischievous only to instruct them. Engrossed in pride over my ruling power, ignorant of your majesty, I offended you. O Lord, may you please forgive me. My intelligence was bewildered, but let my consciousness never again be so impure. You descend into this world, O transcendent Lord, to destroy the warlords who burden the earth and create many terrible disturbances. O Lord, you simultaneously act for the welfare of those who faithfully serve your lotus feet. Obeisances unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Great Soul, who are all-pervading and who reside in the hearts of all. My obeisances unto you, Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty. Unto him who assumes transcendental bodies according to the desires of his devotees, unto him whose form is itself pure consciousness, unto him who is everything, who is the seed of everything, and who is the soul of all creatures, I offer my obeisances. My dear Lord, when my sacrifice was disrupted, I became fiercely angry because of false pride. Thus I tried to destroy your cowherd community with severe rain and wind. O Lord, you have shown mercy to me by shattering my false pride and defeating my attempt to punish Vrindavan. To you, the Supreme Lord, Spiritual Master and Supreme Soul, I have now come for shelter. Shukadeva Goswami said, thus glorified by Indra, Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, smiled and then spoke to him as follows in a voice resonant like the clouds. My dear Indra, it was out of mercy that I stopped the sacrifice meant for you. You were greatly intoxicated by your opulence as King of Heaven, and I wanted you to always remember me. A man blinded by intoxication with his power and opulence cannot see me nearby with the rod of punishment in my hand. If I desire his real welfare, I drag him down from his materially fortunate position. Indra, you may now go. Execute my order and remain in your appointed position as King of Heaven, but be sober without false pride. Then Mother Surabhi, along with her progeny, the cows, offered her obeisances to Lord Krishna. Respectfully requesting his attention, the gentle lady addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was present before her as a cowherd boy. Mother Surabhi said, O Krishna, Krishna, greatest of mystics, O soul and origin of the universe, you are the master of the world, and by your grace, O infallible Lord, we have you as our master. You are our worshipable deity. Therefore, O Lord of the universe, for the benefit of the cows, the Brahmins, the demigods, and all other saintly persons, please become our Indra. As ordered by Lord Brahma, we shall perform your bathing ceremony to coronate you as Indra. O soul of the universe, you descend to this world to relieve the burden of the earth. Shukadeva Goswami said, having thus appealed to Lord Krishna, Mother Surabhi performed his bathing ceremony with her own milk, and Indra, ordered by Aditi and other mothers of the demigods, anointed the Lord with heavenly Ganga water from the trunk of Indra's elephant carrier, Airavata. Thus, in the company of the demigods and great sages, Indra coronated Lord Krishna, the descendant of Dasharatha, and gave him the name Govinda. Tumbaru, Narada, and other Gandharvas, along with the Vidyadharas, Siddhas, and Charanas, came there to sing the glories of Lord Hari, which purify the entire world. And the wives of the demigods, filled with joy, danced together in the Lord's honor. The most eminent demigods chanted the praises of the Lord and scattered wonderful showers of flowers all around him. All three worlds felt supreme satisfaction, and the cows drenched the surface of the earth with their milk. Rivers flowed with various kinds of tasty liquids. Trees exuded honey. Edible plants came to maturity without cultivation, and hills gave forth jewels formerly hidden in their interiors. O Parikshit, beloved of the Kuru dynasty, upon the ceremonial bathing of Lord Krishna, all living creatures, even those cruel by nature, became entirely free of enmity. After he had ceremonially bathed Lord Govinda, who was the master of the cows and the cowherd community, King Indra took the Lord's permission and, surrounded by the demigods and other higher beings, returned to his heavenly abode. Chapter 28. Krishna rescues Nanda Maharaj from the abode of Varuna. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, having worshipped Lord Janardhan and fasted on the Ekadashi day, Nanda Maharaj entered the water of the Kalindi on the Dwadashi day to take his bath. Because Nanda Maharaj entered the water in the dark of night, disregarding that the time was inauspicious, a demoniac servant of Varuna seized him and brought him to his master. Not seeing King Nanda, the cowherd men loudly cried out, O Krishna! O Rama! Lord Krishna heard their cries and understood that his father had been captured by Varuna. Therefore, the Almighty Lord, who makes his devotees fearless, went to the court of Varunadev. Seeing that the Lord Rishikesh had arrived, the demigod Varuna worshipped him with elaborate offerings. Varuna was in a state of great jubilation upon seeing the Lord, and he spoke as follows. Now my body has fulfilled its function. Indeed, now the goal of my life is achieved, O Lord. Those who accept your lotus feet, O personality of Godhead, can transcend the path of material existence. My obeisance is unto you, the supreme personality of Godhead, the absolute truth, the supreme soul, within whom there is no trace of the illusory energy which orchestrates the creation of this world. Your father, who is sitting here, was brought to me by a foolish, ignorant servant of mine, who did not understand his proper beauty. Therefore, please forgive us. O Krishna, O seer of everything, please give your mercy even to me. O Govinda, you are most affectionate to your father. Please take him home. Shukadeva Goswami said, thus satisfied by Lord Varuna, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord of Lords, took his father and returned home, where their relatives were overjoyed to see them. Nanda Maharaj had been astonished to see for the first time the great opulence of Varuna, the ruler of the ocean planet, and also to see how Varuna and his servants had offered such humble respect to Krishna. Nanda described all this to his fellow cowherd men. Hearing about Krishna's pastimes with Varuna, the cowherd men considered that Krishna must be the Supreme Lord, and their minds, O King, were filled with eagerness. They thought, will the Supreme Lord bestow upon us his transcendental abode? Because he sees everything, Lord Krishna automatically understood what the cowherd men were conjecturing. Wanting to show his compassion to them by fulfilling their desires, the Lord thought as follows. Certainly, people in this world are wandering among higher and lower destinations, which they achieve through activities performed according to their desires and without full knowledge. Thus, people do not know their real destination. Deeply considering the situation in this way, the all-merciful Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, revealed to the cowherd men his abode, which is beyond material darkness. Lord Krishna revealed the indestructible spiritual effulgence, which is unlimited, conscious, and eternal. Sages see that spiritual existence in trance when their consciousness is free of the modes of material nature. The cowherd men were brought by Lord Krishna to the Brahmarava, the Brahman lake, made to submerge in the water and then lifted up. From the same vantage point that Akrura would later see the spiritual world, the cowherd men saw the planet of the Absolute Truth. Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men felt the greatest happiness when they saw that transcendental abode. They were especially amazed to see Krishna himself there, surrounded by the personified Vedas, who were offering him prayers. Chapter 29. Krishna and the Gopis meet for the Rasa dance. Srila Shukadeva Goswami said, Sri Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full in all opulences. Yet upon seeing those autumn nights scented with blossoming jasmine flowers, he turned his mind toward loving affairs. To fulfill his purposes, he employed his internal potency. The moon then rose, anointing the face of the western horizon with the reddish hue of his comforting rays, and thus dispelling the pain of all who watched him rise. The moon was like a beloved husband who returns after a long absence and adorns the face of his beloved wife with red kumkum. Lord Krishna saw the unbroken disk of the full moon glowing with the red effulgence of newly applied vermilion, as if it were the face of the goddess of fortune. He also saw the kumuda lotuses opening in response to the moon's presence, and the forest gently illumined by its rays. Thus the Lord began to play sweetly on his flute, attracting the minds of the beautiful-eyed gopis. When the young women of Vrindavan heard Krishna's flute song, which arouses romantic feelings, their minds were captivated by the Lord. They went to where their lover waited, each unknown to the others, moving so quickly that their earrings swung back and forth. Some of the gopis were milking cows when they heard Krishna's flute. They stopped milking and went off to meet him. Some left milk curdling on the stove, and others left cakes burning in the oven. Some of them were getting dressed, feeding milk to their infants, or rendering personal service to their husbands, but they all gave up these duties and went to meet Krishna. Other gopis were taking their evening meals, washing themselves, putting on cosmetics, or applying kajal to their eyes. But all the gopis stopped these activities at once, and though their clothes and ornaments were in complete disarray, rushed off to Krishna. Their husbands, fathers, brothers, and other relatives tried to stop them, but Krishna had already stolen their hearts. Enchanted by the sound of his flute, they refused to turn back. Some of the gopis, however, could not manage to get out of their houses, and instead they remained home with their eyes closed, meditating upon him in pure love. For those gopis who could not go to see Krishna, intolerable separation from their beloved caused an intense agony that burned away all impious karma. By meditating upon him, they realized his embrace, and the ecstasy they then felt exhausted their material piety. Although Lord Krishna is the Supreme Soul, these girls simply thought of him as their male lover and associated with him in that intimate mood. Thus, their karmic bondage was nullified and they abandoned their gross material bodies. Sri Parikshit Maharaj said, "O sage, the gopis knew Krishna only as their lover, not as the Supreme Absolute Truth. So how could these girls, their minds caught up in the waves of the modes of nature, free themselves from material attachment?" Shukadeva Goswami said, "This point was explained to you previously. Since even Shishupal, who hated Krishna, achieved perfection, then what to speak of the Lord's dear devotees? O King, the Supreme Lord is inexhaustible and immeasurable, and he is untouched by the material modes because he is their controller. His personal appearance in this world is meant for bestowing the highest benefit on humanity. Persons who constantly direct their lust, anger, fear, protective affection, feeling of impersonal oneness, or friendship toward Lord Hari are sure to become absorbed in thought of him. You should not be so astonished by Krishna, the unborn master of all masters of mystic power, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After all, it is the Lord who liberates this world." Seeing that the girls of Braja had arrived, Lord Krishna, the best of speakers, greeted them with charming words that bewildered their minds. Lord Krishna said, "O most fortunate ladies, welcome. What may I do to please you? Is everything well in Braja? Please tell me the reason for your coming here. This night is quite frightening, and terrible creatures are lurking about. Return to Braja, O slender-waisted girls. This is not a proper place for women. Not finding you at home, your mothers, fathers, sons, brothers, and husbands are certainly searching for you. Don't cause anxiety for your family members. Now you have seen this Vrindavan forest, full of flowers and resplendent with the light of the full moon. You have seen the beauty of the trees, with their leaves trembling in the gentle breeze coming from the Yamuna. So now go back to the coward village. Don't delay. O chaste ladies, serve your husbands and give milk to your crying babies and calves. On the other hand, perhaps you have come here out of your great love for me, which has taken control of your hearts. This is, of course, quite commendable on your part, since all living entities possess natural affection for me. The highest religious duty of a woman is to sincerely serve her husband, behave well toward her husband's family, and take good care of her children. Women who desire a good destination in the next life should never abandon a husband who has not fallen from his religious standards, even if he is obnoxious, unfortunate, old, unintelligent, sickly, or poor. For a woman from a respectable family, petty adulterous affairs are always condemned. They bar her from heaven, ruin her reputation, and bring her difficulty and fear. Transcendental love for me arises by the devotional processes of hearing about me, seeing my deity form, meditating upon me, and faithfully chanting my glories. The same result is not achieved by mere physical proximity. So please go back to your homes." Shukadeva Goswami said, "Hearing these unpleasant words spoken by Govinda, the gopis became morose. Their great hopes were frustrated, and they felt insurmountable anxiety. Their heads hanging down and their heavy, sorrowful breathing drying up their reddened lips, the gopis scratched the ground with their toes. Tears flowed from their eyes, carrying their cudgel and washing away the vermilion smeared on their breasts. Thus they stood, silently bearing the burden of their unhappiness. Although Krishna was their beloved, and although they had abandoned all other objects of desire for his sake, he had been speaking to them unfavorably. Nonetheless, they remained unflinching in their attachment to him. Stopping their crying, they wiped their eyes and began to speak, their voices stammering with agitation." Shri Gopya Uchu Maivang Vibho Hati Bhavan Kaditun Nishansam Santyanji Sava Vishayang Sava Paramulam Bhukta Bajasya Tadavagraham Achijasman Devo Yatari Purusho Bajate Mumukshu Yat Patya Patya Suridam Vrittiranga Strinam Sudham Itidam Vedata Yoktam Astvevnetadupadeshupadetahishe Vrishtobhavam Tunivatam Kirabandaratma Govandihi Tahivatinka Shalaswat Atman Nityakriye Patisutadi Bharati Daikim Tannak Pasida Padamesha Damasma Chindya Asham Ritam Tahicharadabinda Netra Chittam Sukena Bhavatapaditam Graheshu Yamni Vishat Chitakaravati Bliyakriti Bharopadam Chalatastava Paranulad Yamakatam Vajamato Kadavama Chingva Beautiful Gopi said, O all-powerful one, you should not speak in this cruel way. Do not reject us, who have renounced all material enjoyment to render devotional service to your lotus feet. Reciprocate with us, O stubborn one, just as the primeval Lord, Sri Narayan, reciprocates with his devotees in their endeavors for liberation. Our dear Krishna, as an expert in religion, you have advised us that the proper religious duty for women is to faithfully serve their husbands, children, and other relatives. We agree that this principle is valid, but actually, this service should be rendered to you. After all, O Lord, you are the dearmost friend of all embodied souls. You are their most intimate relative, and indeed their very self. Expert transcendentalists always direct their affection toward you because they recognize you as their true self and eternal beloved. What use do we have for these husbands, children, and relatives of ours who simply give us trouble? Therefore, O Supreme Controller, grant us your mercy. O Lotus-Eyed One, please do not cut down our long-cherished hope to have your association. Until today, our minds were absorbed in household affairs, but you easily stole both our minds and our hands away from our housework. Now our feet won't move one step from your lotus feet. How can we go back to Braja? What would we do there? Dear Krishna, please pour the nectar of your lips upon the fire within our hearts, a fire you ignited with your smiling glances and the sweet song of your flute. If you do not, we will consign our bodies to the fire of separation from you, O friend, and thus, like yogis, attain to the abode of your lotus feet by meditation. O Lotus-Eyed One, the goddess of fortune considers it a festive occasion whenever she touches the soles of your lotus feet. You are very dear to the residents of the forest, and therefore we will also touch those lotus feet. From that time on, we will be unable even to stand in the presence of any other man, for we will have been fully satisfied by you. Goddess Lakshmi, whose glance is sought after by the demigods with great endeavor, has achieved the unique position of always remaining on the chest of her lord, Narayan. Still, she desires the dust of his lotus feet, even though she has to share that dust with Tulsi Devi and indeed with the Lord's many other servants. Similarly, we have approached the dust of your lotus feet for shelter. Therefore, O vanquisher of all distress, please show us mercy. To approach your lotus feet, we abandoned our families and homes, and we have no desire other than to serve you. Our hearts are burning with intense desires generated by your beautiful smiling glances. O jewel among men, please make us your maidservants. Seeing your face encircled by curling locks of hair, your cheeks beautified by earrings, your lips full of nectar, and your smiling glance, and also seeing your two imposing arms which take away our fear, and your chest, which is the only source of pleasure for the goddess of fortune, we must become your maidservants. Dear Krishna, what woman in all the three worlds wouldn't deviate from religious behavior when bewildered by the sweet, drawn-out melody of your flute? Your beauty makes all three worlds auspicious. Indeed, even the cows, birds, trees, and deer manifest the ecstatic symptom of bodily hair standing on end when they see your beautiful form. Clearly you have taken birth in this world to relieve the fear and distress of the people of Braja, just as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the primeval Lord, protects the domain of the demigods. Therefore, O friend of the distressed, kindly place your lotus hand on your maidservants' heads and burning breasts. Shukadeva Goswami said, Smiling upon hearing these despondent words from the gopis, Lord Krishna, the supreme master of all masters of mystic yoga, mercifully enjoyed with them, although he is self-satisfied. Among the assembled gopis, the infallible Lord Krishna appeared just like the moon surrounded by stars. He whose activities are so magnanimous made their faces blossom with his affectionate glances, and his broad smiles revealed the effulgence of his jasmine bud-like teeth. As the gopis sang his praises, that leader of hundreds of women sang loudly in reply. He moved among them, wearing his Vaijayanti garland, beautifying the Vrindavan forest. Sri Krishna went with the gopis to the bank of the Yamuna, where the sand was cooling and the wind, enlivened by the river's waves, bore the fragrance of lotuses. There Krishna threw his arms around the gopis and embraced them. He aroused Cupid and the beautiful young ladies of Braja by touching their hands, hair, thighs, belts, and breasts, by playfully scratching them with his fingernails, and also by joking with them, glancing at them, and laughing with them. In this way, the Lord enjoyed his pastimes. The gopis became proud of themselves for having received such special attention from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and each of them thought herself the best woman on earth. Lord Keshava, seeing the gopis too proud of their good fortune, wanted to relieve them of this pride and show them further mercy. Thus, he immediately disappeared. Chapter 30, The Gopis Search for Krishna. Shukadev Goswami said, when Lord Krishna disappeared so suddenly, the gopis felt great sorrow at losing sight of him, like a group of female elephants who have lost their mate. As the cowherd women remembered Lord Krishna, their hearts were overwhelmed by his movements and loving smiles, his playful glances and enchanting talks, and by the many other pastimes he would enjoy with them. Thus absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, the Lord of Rama, the gopis began acting out his various transcendental pastimes. Because the gopis were absorbed in thoughts of their beloved Krishna, their bodies imitated his way of moving and smiling, his way of beholding them, his speech, and his other distinctive features. Deeply immersed in thinking of him and maddened by remembering his pastimes, they declared to one another, I am Krishna! Singing loudly of Krishna, they searched for him throughout the Vrindavan forest like a band of madwomen. They even asked the trees about him, who, as the Supersoul, is present inside and outside of all created things, just like the sky. The gopi said, O Ashvata tree, O Plaksha, O Nyagrodha, have you seen Krishna? That son of Nanda Maharaj has gone away after stealing our minds with his loving smiles and glances. O Kurubaka tree, O Ashoka, O Naga, Punaga, and Champaka, has Balaram's younger brother, whose smile removes the audacity of all proud women, passed this way? O most kind Tulsi, to whom the feet of Govinda are so dear, have you seen that infallible one walk by, wearing you and encircled by swarms of bees? O Malati, O Malika, O Japti and Mutika, has Madhava gone by here, giving you pleasure with the touch of his hand? O Chuta, O Priyala, O Panasa, Asana and Kovidar, O Jambu, O Arka, O Bilva, Bakula and Amma, O Kadamba and Nipa and all you other plants and trees living by the banks of the Yamuna who have dedicated your very existence to the welfare of others, we gopis have lost our minds, so please tell us where Krishna has gone. O Mother Earth, what austerity did you perform to attain the touch of Lord Keshava's lotus feet, which has brought you such great joy that your bodily hairs are standing on end? You appear very beautiful in this condition. Was it during the Lord's current appearance that you acquired this ecstatic symptom, or was it perhaps much earlier, when he stepped upon you in his form of the dwarf Vamanadev, or even earlier, when he embraced you in his form of the boar Varahadev? O friend, wife of the deer, has Lord Achyuta been here with his beloved, bringing great joy to your eyes? Indeed, blowing this way is the fragrance of his garland of kunda flowers, which was smeared with the kumkum from the breasts of his girlfriend when he embraced her. O trees, we see that you were bowing down when the younger brother of Rama walked by here, followed by intoxicated bees swarming around the tulsi manjaris decorating his garland. Did he acknowledge your obeisances with his affectionate glances? He must have been resting his arm on the shoulder of his beloved and carrying a lotus flower in his free hand. Let us ask these creepers about Krishna. Even though they are embracing the arms of their husband, this tree, they certainly must have been touched by Krishna's fingernails, since out of joy they are manifesting eruptions on their skin. Having spoken these words, the gopis, distraught from searching for Krishna, began to act out his various pastimes, fully absorbed in thoughts of him. One gopi imitated Putana, while another acted like infant Krishna and pretended to suck a breast. Another gopi, crying in imitation of infant Krishna, kicked a gopi who was taking the role of the cart demon, Shakatasura. One gopi took the role of Trinavarta and carried away another who was acting like infant Krishna, while yet another gopi crawled about, her ankle bells tinkling as she pulled her feet. Two gopis acted like Rama and Krishna in the midst of several others who took the role of cowherd boys. One gopi enacted Krishna's killing of the demon Vatsasura, represented by another gopi, and a pair of gopis acted out the killing of Bakasura.